The Shift Podcast, Perspective and Our Power to Change, invites us to expand our lives by changing the lens we see through. Is something different calling you? Do you ever ask yourself, is this all there is? Or have you forgotten why you're even here? Trish and Diane create insightful and empowering conversations about connecting the self, soul, nature, and community. Navigating life by choice rather than circumstance is how we make the shift to expand our humanity. The shift starts now.
Welcome, everyone, to the Shift Podcast, Perspective and Our Power to Change. We are on episode 13. That's my favorite number, by the way. So, and the energy just feels great today. We are part of the Cornelia Stephanie Media Group on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. And as always, I want to open up our space by honoring the land on which we settle. We are all settlers on this land, and honoring the original inhabitants of the land, whether named or unnamed. For myself specifically, I'll name the Haudenosaunee, the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation, the Huron-Wendat, and the Ojibwe Chippewa. And as I said, whether named or unnamed, we honor you. We hold gratitude for your stewardship over millennia and the connection to our Mother Earth that has brought us all of these opportunities we have today. Always want to honor that. I'm Trish Campbell, your host. I think I forgot to say that, along with my good friend, Diane McClay, my co-host. And we have a special guest today. Also a good friend of mine. His name is Robert T. Norton. He is a real estate appraiser by day and a photographer, artist, writer, recently published author, in all his other sacred moments. And we're so lucky to have him here. We're going to be talking about creativity, how it is the window to self and the soul, and just tapping into more of that. So welcome, everybody. Thank you for spending this next half hour with us. Welcome, Rob. And I'm so happy you're here with us today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for the opportunity, Trish and Diane. And I want to extend a big thanks before I forget to the hardworking production staff behind the scenes. Without them, this doesn't happen. So big thanks to everyone. And let's get rolling.
Yeah. Okay, good. I don't know if you had something to start off with, Diane, but I just wanted to, you know, we're talking about creativity, and the main theme of it is how, you know, we're, as we always do on the shift, looking, taking a deeper look into things, looking beneath the surface, and really want to understand different perspectives. So I know you recently published a book, not just one book, but four books. So, which is a huge accomplishment, especially like during this time and that we are in. So, how did you, you know, you're a real estate appraiser by day. Where's that connection, and how did you get there?
It's, it's a squiggly path like most of life is. That's how I got there. But the idea for a book was, you know, that's been kind of festering or simmering on the back burner for decades. And there was always something to put before it, such as travel or career, advanced degrees, all of those things. So it always kept getting shunted off or put in the background. And then finally, there came a time where it left the background and it became almost a necessity. And that was about finding a balance. Mm-hmm. I had been in a toxic workplace situation for a few years. And one of the things I recognized in the heat of that moment was I needed to balance out the negativity I was experiencing with something very positive and creative, something that was tangible that I could control. So at that point, I started to lean back into my photography, but then also started to write as a way of expressing and getting things out. So it wasn't necessarily about the situation, but it was just, for me, it was a way to compartmentalize. So this chunk or part of life is problematic. I'm just going to put it in a box and stick it on the shelf, and we'll deal with it on Monday. But the weekend's my time. I need to balance out. I need to pick up a camera. I need to fire up a computer. I need to write and just forget about all that stuff. So in that respect, it was almost medicinal, if you will, but it certainly was about seeking balance.
I want to chime in here because you said one of my favorite words, which is that you had an awareness. And on the Shift podcast, that's one of the first steps that Trish and I talk about, is the only way you can shift something, the only way you can change your perspective and look at it from a different way, is if you actually start with awareness. And it sounds to me like you very clearly had an awareness that you didn't have balance in your life and you needed it. And writing was a way to do that. So once again, without pre-planning our conversation at all, you flow very nicely. I just came home from a trip home to see my parents and to spend some time on a Christmas tree farm that my sister owns. And I hadn't planned on seeing my parents. But as I was driving with somebody, I passed the road that my parents live on, and I suddenly had this ache in my heart. And it was the absence of balance. It was the absence of connection, the absence of community with my family. And I changed, because I had that awareness, what I realized is I don't have to stick with my original travel plan. I have the power to change it. I have the power to do something about it and make a choice. And I amended my travel plans and I got 5 extra days with my parents. And now I also am coming back in feeling more balanced and connected. So I just think it's kind of interesting how that ties in.
Yeah. And that was no accident that you happened to be driving down that road. You know, that was no accident at all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I'll tie it into those two beautiful signs that you have behind you, Diane, of choice and courage. So awareness is the first step. And once we have awareness, then we have a choice. So I had a choice to, you know, be miserable and to ruin my weekend, my time with, you know, the issues that were going on in the workplace. And I said, well, that's a ridiculous choice. Monday to Friday, I can deal with that as needed, with courage. But for the weekends, I had to make a choice. And that was the choice. And then I understood that the value of that balancing, and in fact, and this is one of the things we get wrong in Western society. I mean, we're not as bad as the Japanese with working to death, but there's something called the law of diminishing returns. So, you know, this fascination we have about bragging about 80 or 90 hour weeks, I mean, it's ridiculous. You're not productive at that point or at that space and time when you've put in that much hours. So really what you need to do, if you take vacations or you have a hobby, you need that escape or that change. And that always brings you back Monday stronger and more refreshed.
Yeah. I am totally, I mean, I'm in awe at how much you're aligned with like our message and like everything we're doing here on the Shift. And it's just so beautiful. And I want to go back to what you talked about Rob, about the feeling you were having like with your work and then feeling that imbalance. And I think for a lot of people, they when they feel that, they don't know what to do with that feeling. And we forget about those things that can help bring us out of that. Like you use the word medicinal. And I feel that so resonant because for me, I can relate, like writing was a huge healer for me. And one of the things I think go of as adults in like Western culture and being productive and having to prove ourselves all the time and go and do is that we forget, we leave all of the essence of who we are, who we came in to be, who we were as children, the imagination we had when we were kids, and with the busyness of life, we leave all that behind. And it's like, that is something that can help us. We think we you know, there's no time for that, but it's almost essential. And I think of one of my favorite quotes is from the Little Prince. All grown-ups were once children, but few of them remember it. And that is like so true because we forget, we think, you know, we have to do X, Y, and Z and we don't have time for that. But it's just so inspirational that you chose to tap into that creativity. And I want to talk about that, like tapping into that and how that helped you, like, because you used the word medicinal. So I just want to kind of take that a little bit deeper and how your process through that was.
Yeah, I mean, the creativity, you know, as I spoke before, I mean, it certainly softened the stress. It softened the doubts. Pretty much the worst thing you can do when you're in a bad situation, whether it's a workplace thing or a relationship thing or just a life stage, is just keep cycling through that same head trash and letting your ego talk about the doubts, and also listening to, I'm not, counsel is the wrong word, but, you know, we'll say quote unquote advice of other people who have a limited knowledge of your situation, but they run on a different tack than you do. And, you know, they'll give you the advice that's don't fight, you can't beat City Hall, that kind of bad advice. It goes against the grain. So, I mean, you have to think deeply about it, garner an awareness. I mean, I've studied Buddhist meditation, studied with monks off and on for 16 years now. So that's given me a heightened sense of ability to reflect or be aware as to what I'm undergoing. One of my favorite meditations is called Silent Watcher. So in challenging times, I can just kind of sit back from it, and that Silent Watcher can take a macro view of everything and give me some input or some counsel. And I have to trust my own counsel before anybody else's. That's something I had to learn to do, and it's difficult in society. And it touches in with the themes of your book of connecting with soul and listening to your inner voice. It's going to guide you in the direction that you need to move in. So people have to work hard. They have to invest the time and learn to know themselves. And when we talk about our busy lives, to touch on what you said earlier, why can't we make that space for ourselves? Why are we the last on the to-do list, you know, in terms of all the responsibilities we have? And perhaps there should be an examination of that and a reframing and a perspective shift to say, well, wait a minute, if I do some self-care and nurture myself, then I'm going to be stronger and better able to fulfill my other so-called responsibilities, whatever they may be. And it's one of the fundamental tenets of Buddhism. They speak, I mean, one of the monks I studied with, he said quite clearly, if your job is to, or your purpose or mission on earth is to, you know, put compassion out there and have compassion for the benefit of others, for all sentient beings, you can't do that if you're broken or damaged or running on an empty tank. So that's how they reconcile what Western society would call selfishness. In Eastern philosophy, they're saying, no, you take care of yourself. Make sure you do that so that you can be nice and strong and robust, so that you can have even more powerful compassion out there and do greater works because you've taken care of yourself. And it's funny in Western society. I mean, I see people, my father was one of them, they take more care of their cars than they do of themselves. You know, it's just absurd. The you know, fascination with, or the, you know, it's not an addiction, but just this bizarre thought process of, well, my car is more important than I am.
Well, can I chime in on that?
You
know, it's, I think we're talking about creativity and how to tap into that and bring balance in our lives. But I think what you just said, Rob, is being able to take care of ourselves first. And I love the concept of the silent watcher. When we can do that, when we can be the observer without reacting, without judgment, without expectation, I think that we actually lay down a path for ourselves to actually have better interactions with our family, especially around the holidays. You know, Trish and I both just went home, and I know that I made a conscious effort to be the watcher, to observe without judgment. And I found, and I'm happy to report that, that my time at home, around my family and around a busy, crazy, chaotic Christmas tree farm that opens the day after Thanksgiving, was I had a lot of joy in my heart, and I had no trepidation. I had no worries about, hey, am I going to say the wrong thing? Am I going to, you know, tee somebody up to have an argument? And by being able to sit in that watching place, I think that that watching place serves two sides of us. One, it allows us to observe how we respond to situations around us. But it also, I think the watching place, and I'm going to coin that phrase right now, the three of us can now own it together and write a book called The Watching Place. so anybody's listening, we've already copyrighted it. But I think when we operate from the watching place, I think then we invite our muses. I think we can listen to our inspirers and the pieces that cause these writing pieces to come out. I mean, tell me if I'm right. Tell me if I'm wrong. How does that sound to
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would add a more in the moment theme to it by saying that when you're in the watching place or you're operating from a position of silent watcher, your ego investment is diminished. And in fact, that's the moment where you have ego on a leash, because you don't need to get dragged into those family squabbles and that nonsense because you have nothing to prove. So that's a very liberating space. And I myself can't always be in there, but I certainly enjoy when I remember to be there and I make that conscious choice to be there. And really that's what Silent Watcher does quite often. You know, in a situation where you're approaching that red zone and you're thinking, okay, I've got something really nasty I can say now. Silent Watcher kind of pipes up and says, hey man, you can go down that road and you know where you're going to end up because you've been there before. So you know what the outcome is in all likelihood. Or you also know, based on your training and education and the work that you've done, you also know that the correct course of action would be to zip it and just let it go. One of the things I'm fond of discussing with friends now when we're talking about inner family dynamics quite often, and even colleagues in the workplace, I've taken to asking people the question, I think I asked Trish this a couple of weeks ago, would you want to trade places with that person? Okay, if we agree that they're suffering and they're ego dominated and they're acting out from their pain from being in samsara, would we like to be them? As annoying as they are, would we like to change places with them? And the answer is resoundingly no, we would not.
That's, I think, where compassion comes in and having that, you know, the being the, you know, number one, being the observer, but also that allows you to be present and that allows you to walk through those dynamics, exchanges, whatever, with compassion. And I think the more I know, like you said, Diane, we were both home with our families, and the more you opportunities you have to do this, I think the more natural it becomes. Like the, you know, it's like each time is you know, it's never perfect necessarily, but it's I just noticed, yeah, there's that more natural presence of being and, like you said, inner joy and all of that. So where I wanted to take this next, because you said the word muse, Diane, and that's in the title of one of Rob's works. And we were talking about ego coming in the way of our, you know, just our existence. But specifically, I want to talk about that ego coming in with creativity and like your process of writing. And specifically, you have a book called Full Moon Poems, Whispered by a Muse. And so, yeah, and you also have another book called The Aroma and another series called Meditations on Photography. So, but I want to go back to the Full Moon Poems, because I know personally the story behind that, but I want you to share that, because I think it's important for people to hear that like to not, you know, kind of, sometimes we can kind of get it in our own way. So I'll let you talk about it before I.
Okay, definitely. The main thing that came about from Full Moon Poems, I mean, I'll set it with a bit of background. That was 27 poems that were written over a 3-day period, starting Friday night and ending Sunday night. And that just seemed like a good time to cap it. But it was a very unique experience for me, one that I've never had in my life. So I've been in flow state in different arenas. So on a ski hill, on a mountain, putting together the perfect run, you know, practicing martial arts, being in the boxing ring, driving a Ferrari on a racetrack. There's those flow states, and you can even see it in your work sometimes. You catch these glimpses of it, and it's really wonderful. But I'd never experienced it to that effect. And I kind of have you to thank for it, my friend, because it was your book that precipitated that. So obviously there was such powerful insights that it just aligned me with that. So here we are Friday night, I'm in the kitchen cooking dinner, and it's going to be one of those food prep weeks because I'm a fan of batch cooking. So I'm set for the weekend that I'm going to be doing all these things, stews and soups and freezing it and whatnot. So here I am cooking, and I got some tunes blasting, got some old vinyl on the turntable. And I'm like, wow, well, that's kind of a cool thought. So I grabbed a pad and a pen and I started writing. And there was a couple stanzas of a poem, just some thoughts, random. Went back to cooking. And all of a sudden, it was almost like a timer went off, ding, ding. Oh, there's another interesting thought. Let me go write that down. And that process was repeated over the weekend. And the important thing was I just let it happen. I didn't sit there, the old me, or normally I would have sat there and said, oh, geez, you're writing poems. Okay, well, let's just do that for the next 6 hours. Let's try and crank out these poems.
Which is the production I'm going to interrupt you. That's the production oriented energy that our Western society typically tells us. Once you start a poem, you better finish it till it's done, and that better be perfect. Right. So I just want to call that out to our audience. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
But no problem.
Being in free flow means let it happen when it happens. And this is where you blatantly have to uninvite the perfectionist from the party. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, sorry, this is not, you can't show up here. Your editor, your researcher, you know, as writers, we have three different brains, right? The writing brain, the editing brain, the researching brain. And then there's probably a fourth one of, oh my gosh, the critical brain, is somebody going to like it? So good on you for just like living in that moment to moment free flow state and just letting it happen and letting it be a part of you. So I'm sorry to interrupt your conversation. Bring us back.
All valid. I mean, that's what was required in the moment. And I was fortunate that I was at that point where I could recognize it and I could let that happen. Mm-hmm. Basically I spent the weekend ping-ponging back and forth between the kitchen and the writing table on the couch. And I've got an open concept room and there's a beautiful brick wood burning fireplace. So of course, Sunday is the fireplace ritual. So, you know, there's a fire going. So it's a pretty comfortable writing environment. And lo and behold, just let it go. It was, you know, really interesting flow state. And when the weekend was done, here was this book. And so what that experience taught me, I was really awestruck by it, was that I gained a deeper understanding of my flow state and experienced it in a whole new way. I was also pleased that I learned to let the muses navigate, because in that moment, I really recognized something outside of myself was guiding what was being created. So it was just up to me to accept that divine guidance in those moments. And then as a wrap up to all of that was the humility, the recognition that I'm only part of the creative process. So I recognize the gift that the universe has chosen to speak through me in that particular book. I may never write another book of poetry again. That was my first one ever. It was beyond easy, but it wasn't me. You know, I had some thoughts, but I was recording it. That was something else that was going on that particular weekend. So if that ever transpires again, I'll be happy to write another 15 poems or 20 poems if that's what's meant to happen.
I have a question for both of you as writers, if I can, if you can indulge me. And that is, when you hear the muse, right, and we've all said we have them, can you describe what the voice of your muse sounds like, or what it feels like to you when you have the creative inspiration? Because I think that's important for our listeners, for people who don't know how to slow down and hear. Maybe they have a muse on their shoulder, but they don't know what that voice is. So is there a description of each of your muses that you'd like to share, or what you feel like when the muse helps contribute to your creative process?
I'm trying to think, like, it's almost like a it's indescribable, really. Like, it's a separate voice from my own. I call it the quiet voice, but it's almost like, you know, it's so different than my own, like the reel that's in my head, that I can tell. It stops me, it pauses me to say, okay, here, I need to let this flow. And I mean, that's what it is for me. And I feel that a lot when I go in nature. That's where I'm immediately, I would say, triggered. I think just because I'm so connected to source in that space. So yeah. I don't even know if I can put a description to it. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, for me, it's similar. I mean, it's you know, kind of a gentle whisper. Certainly that was it with the poems. Like, you find that in nature, I used to connect with that in airports of all places while I was waiting for flights and while I was on an airplane. And I've had stewardesses come up and give me like snacks and treats because I'm on my laptop the whole flight. And they're like, oh, you're working so hard. And it's like, you know, I just kind of chuckle. It's like, well, I'm creating. I'm not really working. This isn't work.
For me, it's like I feel like there is somebody sitting on my shoulder. Mm. And it's like have you ever been nuzzled on the neck by a puppy or a dog? Have you ever been nuzzled by a loved one, you know, or someone you're dating where it's not a full on kiss, but it's a little brush against the side of your neck. Yeah. And for me, it feels like that little brush goes right up into my ear. And then Rob and like you guys, then it's kind of like a different voice and it's a different whisper for me. Yeah. But I always feel like my muse is sitting on my shoulder, just waiting. So.
Yeah.
And to our listeners, I would say, like, literally, just go get yourself a blank, empty paper journal.
Yeah.
And just carry it with you. And it doesn't, for me, all my journals, I never start in the very beginning. I just randomly open a page and I put a date and a time. Because I don't want to be bound by the linearness of reading left to right or processing left to right. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll write upside down. But anybody, I would just tell people, just get in the practice of having something with you at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you feel that nudge or hear that whisper, then just write out what comes to you and see what shows up. Rob? Yeah.
And because we're in such a digital age now, one of the habits I've adopted, and this came about from, you know, being in transit. So you'll see me on my phone. I'm sending an email to myself. Okay, with the whispers of the muses in the moment, or mm-hmm. something that I observed or saw based on the situation I'm in, because people are fascinating. So you do some people watching or overhear what they say, and it's like, wow, that's some good dialogue for a story. So me being me, I know that if I don't record that somehow, it's going to vanish into the ether, and then I'm going to be, you know. So what I've done is I've opened a Scribbles email folder in my inbox. Mm-hmm. And then I can write a passage, and it's frequently somewhere between 3 to 7 paragraphs worth of material. And then it just gets emailed and locked away in the Scribbles folder. And that way, when I have time, you know, typically I'm writing on a Saturday or Sunday morning over morning coffee from 7 till 10. So when I have some projects that are put down or that I'm stuck on or that are completed, if I feel like just visiting something totally new, I go into the Scribbles folder and I start pulling out some of these things. And that's kind of the genesis of how a short story will materialize, is from those scribbles.
I love that process. We're going to have a part two to this conversation, Rob. Like, we're not done talking about this. We barely tapped or scratched the surface. So we're out of time. So we're inviting you back if you'll come back.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Rob's books are available on Amazon.com, right, Rob? And
yeah.
BarnesandNoble.com
Barnes
right now.
Barnes and Noble.
And so look for those, and we'll be back with more of this conversation because there's so much more to talk about. Diane, I'll let you have the last word.
Just Rob, thank you. You're inspiring. We got to wrap this up, but we're going to carry this into another 2 or 3 part series. And as always, you can get more information on the Cornelia Stephanie Media Group app. Stay tuned for Cornelia Stephanie and Living Heaven on Earth as the next show. And then Dancing to Heal with Jenny C. Cohen after that.
Yes.
Rob, please, please, please come back.
Yes, come back. Thanks,
my
everyone.
Pleasure. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Shift Podcast, where perspective and our power to change intersect. Slowing down to look at things from a different angle is necessary to affect positive change. You hold the power to transform yourself and your life. It is already inside you, and it's within reach. Clarity comes from awareness. Momentum comes from choice. Healing, growth, and transformation happen on the Shift Podcast. The first and third Fridays at 12:30 p.m. Pacific. For more information, go to invibe.ca or dianemclay.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.